This is part two of the original Killing Your Straw Man article. Killing Your Straw Man, a Free Man's Chronicle. I'd like to tell you about a man named Joe. I met Joe serendipitously via a forwarded email not too long ago and contacted him shortly thereafter. It seemed as though Joe was having a few problems and complications while trying to be a free and sovereign man, as well as a secured party creditor. I met up with Joe for coffee just a few days later and found that we had much of the same information and shared many of the same values, including an urgent desire to be truly free human beings on this earth and within this once great country. Joe lives here in Salt Lake County, Utah, part-time, part-time in Mobile, Alabama, and in China the rest of the time. Being fortunate enough to have traveled the world myself for a number of years, I have a good idea of what unique and wonderful cultures the Asian continent holds. And so has Joe argued that he likes to live in China most of the time, simply because that so-called communist country is 100 times more free than America, I wholeheartedly and sincerely had a difficult time disagreeing with him. Now, this might seem to be the most ridiculous notion in the world to you, you who possibly have never traveled anywhere outside of these United Prison States, and so have only the media as a reference to the illogical fallacies of America's superior government and freedoms. But then, how could you possibly know that only about 200 of the well over 1 billion people we call collectively the Chinese are actually communists? The wealthy government? Communist. The people? Just regular people like you and me. Do you think that because the Democratic Party, a private corporation, is in control of the United States government today, and for the next couple of years, that all citizens of the United States are Democrats? No, that would be a ridiculous and illogical fallacy based on no fact or scientific observation at all. So then, do you think that because the Communist Party is in control of China's government, that all Chinese people are communists as well? No, that would be a ridiculous and illogical fallacy based on no fact or scientific observation at all. And come to think of it, how could you know that your U.S. Constitution was suspended by the Act of April 9th, 1933, by congressional approval and the Declaration of Emergency Powers, and that all authority was handed over to the President of the United States, then one Franklin Delano Roosevelt? And how could you know that we are still living under that same declared state of emergency today? How indeed? The public school system certainly doesn't teach us that, now does it? Bottom line, quote, supposedly, governments were invented to make human life easier and safer. But governments always end up enslaving humanity. That which we create to serve ends up ruling us. The U.S. government, by and for the people, now imprisons millions, takes half the national income by force, overregulates, punishes, tortures, slaughters foreigners, invades countries, overthrows governments, imposes 700 imperialistic bases overseas, inflates the currency, and crashes future generations with massive debts. That which we create to serve us ends up ruling us. The problem with the state as servant thesis is that it is historically completely false, both empirically and logically. The idea that states were voluntarily invented by citizens to enhance their own security is utterly untrue. The earliest governments and empires were in fact a ruling class of slave hunters, who understood that because human beings could produce more than they consumed, they were worth hunting, capturing, breaking in, and owning. When cows are placed in very confining stalls, they beat their heads against the walls, resulting in injuries and infections. Thus, farmers now give them more room, not because they want to set their cows free, but rather because they want greater productivity and lower costs. The next stop after free range is not freedom. The rise of state capitalism in the 19th century was actually the rise of free-range serfdom. Additional liberties were granted to the human livestock, not with the goal of setting them free, but rather with the goal of increasing their productivity. When you look at a map of the world, you're not looking at countries, but farms. You are allowed certain liberties, limited property ownership, movement rights, freedom of association and occupation, but not because your government approves of these rights in principle, since it constantly violates those rights, but rather because free-range livestock is so much cheaper to own and so much more productive. State capitalism, socialism, communism, fascism, democracy, these are all livestock management approaches. Some work well for long periods, and some work very badly. They all fail eventually because it is immoral and irrational to treat human beings as livestock. Rulers have recognized that if they prevent you from fleeing the farm, you will become depressed, inert, and unproductive. A serf is the most productive when he imagines he is free. Thus, your rulers must provide you the illusion of freedom in order to harvest you most effectively. Thus, you are allowed to leave, but never to real freedom, only to another farm. Because the whole world is a farm. They will prevent you from taking a lot of money. They will bury you in endless paperwork. They will restrict your right to work. But you are free to leave. Due to these difficulties, very few people do leave, but the illusion of mobility is maintained. If only one out of 1,000 cows escapes, but the illusion of escaping significantly raises the productivity for the remaining 999, it remains a net gain for the farmer. You are also kept on the farm through licensing. The most productive livestock are the so-called educated professionals. So the rulers fit them with an electronic dog collar called a license, which only allows them to practice their trade on their own farm. To further create the illusion of freedom, in certain farms the livestock are allowed to choose between a few farmers or politicians that the investors present. At best, they are given minor choices, votes, in how they are managed. But they are never given the choice to shut down the farm and be truly free. Government schools are indoctrination pens for livestock. They train children to love the farm and to fear true freedom and independence, and to attack anyone who questions the brutal reality of human ownership. Furthermore, they create jobs for the intellectuals that state propaganda so relies on. The idea that democracy and some sort of social contract justifies the brutal exercise of violent power over billions is patently ridiculous. If you say to a slave that his ancestors chose slavery and therefore he is bound by their decisions, he will simply say, "If slavery is a choice, then I choose not to be a slave." This is the most frightening statement for the ruling classes, which is why they train their slaves to attack anyone who dares speak it. Statism is an ideology, and all ideologies are variations on human livestock management practices. Nationalism is pimped-out bigotry, designed to provoke a Stockholm syndrome in the livestock. You do not have to be livestock. Take the red pill. Wake up. Unquote. That by Stéphane Molyneux. Anyway, as we sipped our coffee, Joe and I began a long discussion about many things, and he thankfully filled in many pieces of the puzzle that I had been missing about the Secure Party creditor issue and the many facets of being a creditor instead of a debtor. And so, with the disclaimer that this is not legal or lawful advice, just covering my ass, I am now going to share what I have learned with you. I recommend to everyone reading this to do your own research and verify everything I say here today. I would also highly recommend that you take my advice offered below and go to your local justice center and sit in court as an observer. You will be amazed at what you see once you comprehend the following information. So what is my straw man? Webster's Ninth New Collegiate Dictionary defines the term straw man as, 1, a weak or imaginary opposition set up only to be easily confuted, or 2, a person set up to serve as a cover for a usually questionable transaction. The straw man can be summed up as an imaginary passive stand-in for the real participant, a front, a blind, a person regarded as a non-entity. The straw man is a shadow, a go-between. So let's start off with a bit of background. First, understand that the government is a collection of private corporations. Chances are you live in an incorporated municipality, nicknamed the city or the town or the borough, located within the county, which in turn is located within the state. This is the corporation acting as the government of that city. For instance, I live in the Draper City Corporation, and around me are the Provo City Corporation and the Salt Lake City Corporation. These are the actual names of the city governments called incorporated municipalities. For a detailed and evidentiary explanation of this corporate structure and its comprehensive annual financial reporting system, the CAFR, please go to thecorporationnation.com. The corporate municipality then creates de facto statutory code, for which they nickname the law. Though most of these codes are not actually congressionally approved law, approved by our so-called representative congressmen, but are instead what is called prima facie, or presumed law, or legality, for which all citizens are required by the corporation they contract with to follow, with their due consent. But legal corporate code is only statutory law if it receives the acquiescence or consent of the governed. We, the people, are the governed. Without our consent, the prima facie presumption of law, or code, has no legal standing. It has no authority backing it up except our agreement that it is law, since the consensual agreement by the governed makes the contractual aspect of the legality null and void if it is not consented to. While a legality or code may not always be lawful, law always trumps legality if consent is not given to the legality or presumed law. Common law or case law should be studied and understood. It is up to you to know this case law, or at least the ones that apply to your specific case, so that it can be considered as common law. Why? Because U.S. code is 157 feet long in dozens of volumes. So no human being could possibly know the law or code. So if you want common law to be considered in a court of law, you will have to research and present that case law to the court yourself. The so-called judge, an attorney in a black muumuu, has no legal requirement to introduce case law or common law into his own court, regardless of whether or not it would prove your innocence. Nor does the prosecuting attorney, and believe it or not, neither does your defending attorney, an agent of the court, not yourself. This is why defending yourself with the knowledge of jurisdiction and common law is paramount. In other words, if you want the court and or the jury, always request and even demand a jury trial lest the privately incorporated judge seal your fate. If you want the court and or the jury to consider actual law, you must be the one to introduce and ensure that this law is read in the court and duly registered as evidence of common or case law. The municipality then hires police officers to enforce all of these legal codes. These are called code enforcement officers. A policeman veiled in municipal corporate authority becomes a police officer, an officer of the municipal corporation. These officers work for the municipal corporation, the city or town you live in, a private corporate police force enforcing the codes created by this private corporation, but not necessarily the common law. They have no requirement to protect and serve you or your neighbor's constitutional rights, since you really have none in a corporate structure under a declared state of emergency. But they are required only to protect the continuity and code of the municipal corporation they serve. They are only there to help you to obey city, county, state, and U.S. code by fining and arresting you if you do not obey that code. These codes that I am referring to are all corporate codes, as all of these cities, counties, states, and the United States, or federal municipality, Washington, D.C., are also incorporated entities. Though you may live in what is referred to as an unincorporated area, you are still within a county or state corporation, and part of the United States Incorporated, the corporate veil of artificial personhood that is laying on top of and killing slowly the United States of America. In an unincorporated area, a city or town that is not a municipal corporation, your law enforcement agency is the county sheriff. This is why the county sheriff is of such vital importance to any of the freedoms we still do enjoy. The only truly lawful representative, elected and approved by the people of common law. Many elected sheriffs across the country, though, have sold out their people by assigning away that lawful right in lieu of federal grants and United Nations treaties. Salt Lake County's Sheriff Jim Winder is no exception. After being elected to a second term in office, he and the poisonous county council dissolved the sheriff's department and created a private corporation called the Unified Police District, of which the elected sheriff became the chief executive officer, or CEO, of that now private incorporated police force. Counties across America are falling prey to this act of treason, losing the last vestige of protection of their common law rights, and Salt Lake County is now literally a police state. Into the world we are birthed. But for some real perspective, let's go back even further, to the day that you were born. The collective corporation wastes no time in grabbing up its slaves and forcing them into indentured servitude as citizens. The seemingly harmless act of filling out a certificate of live birth ensures that you, a living, breathing human being with a soul, are ushered into this corporate structure without any chance to challenge this action. Your parents have just signed their newborn baby, birthed into the United States under maritime law and universal commercial code, the law of the sea, like a ship docking into the port of New York, over to the federal government by way of a certificate of live birth. This contract places its listed contents, you, as property of the United States government. You are born into servitude, and you are immediately considered to be collateral for the good faith and credit of the United States government, U.S. Inc. You are now part of the herd, a herd of human chattel, enslaved from inception. And you have just been veiled in an artificial personhood. You have been incorporated and given a straw man corporate name similar to your human name. Unfortunately, all you can do in response at that tender age is to burp and maybe wet yourself after a good cry. Now, it is important to comprehend that all of this happened at an age before you, as a living, free human being with a soul, had any way to read, comprehend or understand, acquiesce or consent, or sign to agree in writing to this contractual incorporation of your legal person. Consent cannot be lawfully given for any contract without full disclosure and acquiescence of said contract. This is basic standard contract law. The state contracts with you anyway by way of its legal prima facie prerogative to do so, at the tender age of zero. And so your parents signed ownership of you as a commodity over to the government, without even realizing the fate they had just sealed for you as their parents had unwittingly done to them. They just signed away, without comprehension or acquiescence, their most prized possession to the state. And this is why the so-called government agency called Child Protective Services has the legal jurisdiction of acquiring your children at any time it sees fit. Your parents gave them that right at your birth, as you likely did or will do with your own children at their birth. Of course, you can never retrieve your original birth certificate from the federal government. You can only request to acquire a certified copy of that document. The original is kept in the corporation called Washington, D.C., a private corporate district outside of the 50 states united, and used as collateral. You are the collateral, as the attorney-in-fact or representative of that strawman trust, which is created under your strawman corporate name. This trust is accessed in times of corporate commerce, like when a loan, credit card, or contract is written in our strawman name. My free name is Clint P. Richardson. My strawman name is also Clint P. Richardson, but in all capital letters. All legal contracts will be in the all-capital letter name, representing my corporate person, not me as a living, breathing human being. Take a look at your driver's license and any contracts you have, and notice this all-capital letter U. I can talk about Target as the name of the physical building that houses the store that I am going to visit, but its true corporate name is Target Corporation in all capital letters. More on this later. Ownership. Just like the birth certificate, anytime you register anything with the state, you are assigning ownership of that thing over to the state. This is why the Department of Motor Vehicles, or DMV, through the Private Municipal Code Enforcement Police Force, can take your vehicle at any time they see fit. Your consent was given for this as soon as you signed the authorized signature line of your registration forms. But even before that, you learned these codes set up by the state, and you acquired a license to drive, signing away your God-given common law right to travel, in lieu of permission from the state to drive on the authorized signature line. That license gave your consent to the state, county, and municipal corporations to enforce those traffic codes upon you, as you are the carrier of your artificial person, or straw man, your corporate person, that you carry with you like a veil of invisible clothing. The word incorporate indeed stems from the Latin word corpus, meaning to veil something in artificial personhood. This is what a corporation is, an artificial person, with First Amendment rights of free speech due to precedent set by private corporate courts, the laughably titled justice system over the years. So that I am making myself clear, the authorized signature line is on most contracts and even on your own personal or business checkbook. When they say sign on the dotted line, they are referring to this dotted authorized signature line. But if we take a closer look, this is not a line at all. If you take a magnifying glass out and look at the line where you place your signature on your personal checks, you will discover a frightening surprise. That dotted line actually says, authorized signature, authorized signature, authorized signature. What does this mean? By signing that line as a free and natural human being with a soul, you are authorizing your straw man corporate person to engage in commerce with the corporation, using Federal Reserve notes out of your checking account. What do Federal Reserve notes have to do with this transaction? Remember, when you were born, and then, more importantly, when you received a Social Security number, you became collateral for the good faith and credit of the United States government, for the corporation acting as the de facto government. De facto means in practice but not necessarily ordained by law, or in practice or actuality but without being officially established. For example, the people obey a contract as though there were a law enforcing it. Yet there is no such law, only presumed law by consent of the two parties in the contract. This is our government, a corporation not allowed or not being operated under the jurisdiction of law, but only by its own legal code, of which requires the consent of the governed, the contracted citizens. These codes are like the codes at your job. If you don't like the rules, you quit. De jure means what the law says, or concerning the law. It is the common natural law, and it is the basis of a constitutional republic. The original Constitution for the United States of America was indeed a de jure common law consensual contract. But as we discussed earlier, that piece of paper was suspended and a fictional corporate constitution was enacted in its place by a dictatorial de facto executive government. If you look at the back of your Social Security card, a unit of the International Monetary Fund, or IMF, you will find a set of digits. These digits are different from the ones that make up your Social Security number. This one starts with a letter, and is followed by 8 numbers instead of 9. Now look at any $1 bill. Notice that the serial number that is on the front lower left side of that Federal Reserve note has 1 letter and 8 numbers, followed by another letter. Drop the last letter and you have a dollar bill whose serial number matches a Social Security or CUSIP number for some straw man in the United States. Your straw man trust is used as this collateral. This serial number represents the corporate trust account of your straw man that was set up when you were birthed into artificial personhood, as assessed by your Social Security number. Since all contracts you sign on the authorized strawman signature line represent Federal Reserve notes, and since all commerce you enter into is also using this debt money system, you are contracted with the state and its taxes by consent when using these U.S. dollars. When you go to a bank and sign a loan application, that application and the promissory note that you sign gets turned into money via the fractional reserve system. This is how new money is created. It is not money in reality, but rather what is called evidence of debt. This simply means that each Federal Reserve note, digital or paper, is the debt of the country. It must be paid back to the Fed as this money was created or borrowed by the people, or chattel. So instead of money, we carry around debt papers, IOUs, if you will, all representing one straw man or another. Thus, since the property, the home or automobile you have purchased, is with that newly created money out of your strawman trust account through the fractional reserve banking system, it is the property of the state. Now, it is important to understand here what the government has defined as property and why it grants itself the authority to seize the property of any citizen who contracts with it. Quote, "The ultimate ownership of all property is in the state. Individual so-called ownership is only by virtue of government, i.e. law, amounting to mere user. And user must be in accordance with law and subordinate to the necessities of the state." Unquote. Senate Document Number 43-73D, Congress First Session, entitled Contracts Payable in Gold, by George Cyrus Thorpe, submitted to the Senate April 17, 1933. This is a very revealing senatorial document. It sheds light on the concept of government and its requirement of permission and licenses. It also explains why all property must be registered with the state. Who owns all property? Who owns the home and the land it sits on that you call your own? Who has the authority or permission to mortgage property? Quote, "The money will be worth 100 cents on the dollar because it is backed by the credit of the nation. It will represent a mortgage on all the homes and other property of all the people in the nation." Unquote. Congressman Patman, speaking from the Congressional Record of March 9, 1933, and referring to the Act of March 9, 1933. Do you need a license or permit to drive, hunt, and fish? According to the state, which holds your straw man in contract, you do, as you are the legal representative of that fictional straw man signing on the authorized signature line of all contracts. Your contract, your license and registration, with DMV is the very reason why you must obey the codes set up by the DMV. And your hunting and fishing license is a contract in which you give up your natural or common law right to hunt and fish, and instead accept not only the permission or permit, but all the legalities, limits, and seasons imposed by the state through that contract. But what about my new friend Joe? Remember Joe? Since Joe is a free man, not driving, but living and traveling on the land, without intentionally being contracted with the private corporation we know as the de facto government, he does not need a permit or license to do what free men like himself have the right to do. This is the difference between a God-given right and a state-granted privilege. Rights are foolishly and contractually given up for this state permission. Traveling is a lawful term. Driving is a legal term. Traveling is a right. Driving is a privilege. But of course, the corporate de facto police still harass and write citations for Joe, despite the fact that he has no license plate number or driver's license number to reference on the ticket or citation, nor a permit number to reference for anything he does, like hunting and fishing. And so, this is a real conundrum, for Joe is one of many thousands of brave individuals acting as free men and women across this once free country. And sadly, Joe has no support from the rest of the indentured slaves, who have come to value their particular brand of servitude under contract to the state. People, corporate persons, actually self-police their code-enforced society and turn in people like Joe to the code enforcement officers as if he is breaking the law. This is only due to the fact that most corporate persons, or citizens of United States Incorporated, do not know what law is, because corporate government legality and codes have been laid over the law, a thinly veiled yet heavily enforced set of rules that go against everything a free and constitutional society in a republic form of government should stand for. They have been spun by the mainstream media, and even by much of the alternative media, that democracy is freedom. The word republic has long disappeared from the public media discourse. Of course, since a republic ensures that all people are represented in government and in common law as free men, no matter how small the minority is, even a minority of one, a democracy ensures that a certain percent of the population, up to 49.99%, must submit to the will of the vote of the other 50.01%. So in a democracy, 1 to 50% of the people can have their rights taken away by the other half. And this is called freedom. Of course, these people who are on the legal majority side are the people who turn in other people for not obeying the legal codes that they blindly follow, mistaking these legalities as laws. They vote what their media tells them. The minority, in this case Joe, is harassed, cursed, condemned, and cast out as insane. Thus, the democratic process is complete. The republic for which Joe still stands will always be there, though, despite the veil of corporate governance that has usurped the beauty of that free republic. And Joe will never give his consent to this democracy, the duped, voting, and consenting public, who are strangled and blinded by their straw men. Joe goes to court. Now that we have a grasp on what the straw man is, and that as contracted corporate persons we are conducting all business within this de facto presumed law government, let's talk about what a court is. Courts are, surprise, surprise, private corporations. In California and some other states, through the Freedom of Information Act, this is a proven reality. In fact, the judge is the owner of that court, rents that court out in an official capacity to the city, county, or state for a multi-million-dollar lease, and even writes checks on dummy accounts that are not registered with the IRS. The private corporate court earns a percentage of the amount of money it collects in fines, and also receives kickbacks by placing citizens in prison or on probation. All prisoners are assigned a CUSIP number based on that prisoner's strawman trust. This CUSIP number is then bundled up with other CUSIP numbers and sold as bundled securities on the securities markets. These are bundled prisoners. Prisoners are commodities for which the fruit of their labor is traded. This is why jails are overflowing, and why so many people get unsupervised probation for so many months. Probationary status is still a form of incarceration, and community service is often assigned. People on probation receive the QSIP number as well, and are bundled just like the in-house prisoners. Obviously, this is a racket. But as slaves of the corporation used as chattel and collateral, we are subject to this tyranny by consent. But Joe is different. Joe is a secured party creditor. A secured party creditor is an official status as acquired by the UCC-1 federal form available online or in any state government. You can download those here. By simple definition, what is a secured party creditor, or SPC? Joe placed all of his valuables, including his home, land, automobiles, and other property of value, only property without liens, into secured party creditor status. This simply means that Joe, at the signing of this UCC-1 form, rescinded his contracts with the state and became the true owner of his own property. He went from being a debtor to the state, where the state owns his property and allows him to use his home and vehicle with permission and license after being registered to the state, to being a creditor for himself, where Joe legally and lawfully owns his property himself, without the requirement to register it with the state or to get permission or license from the state to use and operate his own property. So now, by owning the property listed in his secured party creditor document, no contract is needed with the state in the form of a license to drive. Joe is traveling freely by law, not driving. Joe has no driver's license, no license plates, no registration, and no insurance. Now, most of the enslaved debtor chattel would hear this and gasp, thinking that Joe is getting away with something here. That's only because the enslaved masses have never truly met anyone that is actually responsible for his own actions, a truly free man on the land. Joe is not getting away with anything. Joe is taking the law into his own hands and squashing corporate legality under his big toe. And since Joe has no driver's license number, nor a license plate number, the police have a very tough time writing Joe an infraction, a ticket. Since he is not operating within the vehicle code and is not able to be tracked by the DMV and legal system, cops get really confused. You see, cops do not know much about the law. They only know code. And so when Joe comes traveling through their municipality with his homemade plates that say, private property, not for hire, they have no reference point to justify a ticket. They get really confused and even angry without really knowing why. How can they write a ticket for breaking a legal code if a man is not bound or contracted to follow those codes? Now, I accompanied Joe on one of his court dates in front of one of the most corrupt justice courts in the county of Salt Lake. This was the West Valley Justice Center, presided over by one Judge Keith Stoney, an accused wife-beater. This guy looked and acted like an evil Dick Cheney, which is saying a lot. And after watching several other cases before Joe, where this fake judge stole hordes of cash in the tens of thousands from people attending their court dates, and after actually hearing this crook say to one of the defendants as he slammed down his gavel in a fit of unholy rage and undue authority, "You owe me $900. The slick public prosecutor called for Joe. Now, before the official court session was started, the bailiff announced to the courtroom to all rise for the Honorable Judge Stoney, to which everyone in the courtroom acquiesced. That is, except for Joe and I. We remained seated, as we did not wish for the court to construe that we consent to or acknowledge the court's or the judge's jurisdiction or authority. This judge was neither honorable nor in a position of power over us, and our insolent act of remaining seated was the first step in acknowledgement of that fact. Every effort was made to never enter into any type of contract or admission of guilt or loss of authority. Joe is the authority over the judge, not the other way around. Only a jury of Joe's peers in a common law court accepted by Joe can have that kind of authority. This is one of the purest acts of non-consent. Joe, who has multiple sclerosis and uses two canes, was sitting in the front row of seats, just outside of the bar. The bar is the wall, generally a wooden fence which may have a gate, between the seats in the courtroom and the actual court. Once you cross over the bar from the seating section and into the court, you have just entered into a foreign land. This is the jurisdiction of Universal Commercial Code and Maritime Law, as represented by the war flag with gold fringe hanging in every courtroom. Crossing the bar is the first step to losing your common law rights by leaving the constitutionally defended states, free land, and lawful jurisdiction and entering into the court's legal UCC jurisdiction. Joe never crossed the bar. He told the judge that he could conduct himself in the seat that he was sitting in and that getting up and entering into the court was too much of a hardship for his handicap. This was his angle. It was true, and it worked. Judge Stoney, having previously received written statements of notice from Joe that he would sue the judge for his bond if he proceeded in any unlawful and non-common law way with this case, considering that Joe was not contracted with the state, did not argue with Joe. Joe gave the judge an out, and the judge decided to take that out. All of this happened without even a spoken word, and without even the slightest clue of anyone else in that courtroom, attorneys included. Because attorneys don't know law either, only corporate legality and code. So Joe never really entered into the court's or the judge's jurisdiction, either physically or verbally. Note that Joe was making a special appearance, and definitely not a general appearance. Please research on your own what these terms mean. They may save your liberties someday. When a plaintiff sues a defendant, the plaintiff chooses the court in which to bring the suit. However, that court may not be able to exercise jurisdiction over a defendant. A special appearance provides a method for a defendant to contest a court's jurisdiction over his person and property. Very important. When a defendant makes a special appearance in court, he does not appear in the court, but stipulates that his appearance is strictly for the purpose of contesting the court's personal jurisdiction over him. The defendant will be able to engage with the court in a debate over the validity of his contacts with the state, but he may not open any other subject, or the court may consider him to be making a general appearance and therefore subject to jurisdiction. Courts have ruled that a general appearance by the defendant constitutes purposeful availment and thus justifies exercise of jurisdiction. A defendant makes a general appearance when he shows up in that forum state's court for the purpose of answering the plaintiff's claim. Because a general appearance indicates the defendant's willingness or acquiescence to have the court adjudicate the dispute, and thus the defendant's use of the benefits and protections of the state, making a general appearance in a state court will subject the defendant to personal jurisdiction in that state. Now note, this is where most people slip up, by accidentally entering into contract and jurisdiction with the court by agreeing with the judge about something. It could be the simple act of sitting down or taking off their hat when the judge asks them to, or answering to the straw man name without stating that you are not that corporate person, all of which can be legally construed as an acknowledgement of understanding or standing under the judge's authority and jurisdiction. Thus, the judge rules that their appearance is now a general one, and they are stuck in the court's jurisdiction. Be careful. When asked for a plea, Joe said that he didn't want to plea, and added for fun that he didn't understand why he needed to. Entering a plea is an admission of guilt, or it is an automatic ticket to a future trial with a not guilty plea. Either way, you would be in the court's jurisdiction through verbal or signed contract, a plea. Some would choose to verbally state on the record that they are innocent in lieu of an official plea, referring to the common law constitutional coda that all men are innocent until proven guilty. But Joe simply did not enter a plea, which really makes it hard for the court to continue with its sham of justice. Next, and this really threw me for a loop until I figured out what he was doing, Joe became what I thought was a bumbling idiot. He kept saying that he didn't understand anything that the judge was telling him. Over and over he stated this, and after a few obviously half-assed attempts to have a normal court proceeding, the judge set a date for moderation, not trial. Joe's continuous response of "I don't understand" was a well-played defense, and only two people in that courtroom knew what it meant: Joe and the judge. By stating that he didn't lawfully understand, Joe never entered into a verbal contract with the judge. He never accepted or acquiesced to anything that was said in that courtroom, making no verbal agreements. You see, the word understand needs to be taken apart and examined before its true legal meaning can be comprehended. To understand is really to stand under. By stating that he understood anything that the judge said in that courtroom, Joe would have been stating that he stands under the court's authority and jurisdiction. This obviously means something totally different than it does in everyday conversational situations, and there is a good reason for that. For when a corporate code enforcement officer arrests you and reads you your Miranda rights, the last statement he makes is, "Do you understand these rights as I have read them to you?" If you say yes, you have just verbally consented to stand under the authority of the corporation and its code, for which this enforcement officer represents, and you have agreed to these so-called rights, like anything you say can and will be used against you. Why would you agree to that? By saying that you don't understand, these rights cannot be applied to you. Some free men even go so far as to say that they overstand what the judge or police officer is saying, leaving no doubt for the record that their acquiescence and consent to the authority of the corporation is not forthcoming. And so Joe never bowed to or acknowledged the authority of the court, and never stood under that authority. When presented with paperwork to sign, an order to appear later, he signed his secure party creditor name, but over the top of his signature, he wrote the following statement: "All rights reserved, without prejudice." This simple phrase does exactly what it says. It reserves all of your rights when you sign any agreement, traffic violation, or any other type of contract, private or public, and essentially makes the contract null and void at any time you so choose in the future. In other words, by saying all rights reserved, you are retaining all of your common law rights that might otherwise be given away in that contract. And one of those rights is to not be bound by any unlawfully presented or later misrepresented contract that is unconstitutional or against your right of refusal. Adding "without prejudice" brings home the statement, reinforcing the fact that all rights are reserved without exception. Joe went to court the next day, too, and he used the same language. He got that case postponed for moderation, not trial, as well. Sadly, all of the other people in these courts admitted guilt 9 times out of 10, The court clerk even handed out papers that stated, quote, "If you sign this, you are giving up your constitutional rights," unquote. So before they even saw the judge, they had already marked the guilty or no contest box and signed their name on the authorized signature line, meaning that they acknowledged that their straw man was guilty of breaking the codes of the municipal corporation and that they would have to pay the fines, go to jail, or endure probation at the judge's whim on behalf of their straw man. It was a sad thing to see, with so many uneducated people signing their rights away as if it was somehow lawful, or for that matter, normal. It should be noted here as well that all of these people who showed up that day for traffic court were by default of their ignorance of the law making a general appearance, and sealed this fate the second they signed that form. The Manufacturer's Statement of Origin. Now you may be wondering why Joe was able to just walk right out of that court without contract, without making a plea, and without being arrested. Since most of these violations of code revolved around traffic rules and regulations of the vehicle code, let's talk about what happens when a brand new automobile is purchased. For new vehicles that are manufactured at the huge conglomerate automakers, a special title is created that will never be seen by the consumer who purchases that vehicle through strawman contract from the dealer. When a car, truck, or SUV is delivered to each dealer, this title, called the Manufacturer's Statement of Origin, or MSO, is delivered along with it. This MSO is very much like a birth certificate, in the fact that it is never actually in the possession of the actual straw man who believes he or she is the owner of the property. When the vehicle is sold, the dealer is required by law, or legal code, to send this MSO to the state, where it is digitally cataloged and destroyed. A few weeks later, a certified copy of the Certificate of Title, never the original copy of the Manufacturer's Statement of Origin, is sent to the human representing the straw man, listing him or her as the operator of that vehicle. But the MSO is always held by the state, making it the true property owner. It then grants permission to drive that vehicle to the corporate person, as stated above through licensing. Sadly, since car dealers are corporations registered with the state themselves, and bound by state regulations and legalities in order to stay in business, they are required to send this MSO to the state government. If they do not, they will simply lose their license to do business in that state. Now you might finally understand why all of the DMV and state paperwork is insistently done at the dealership, and why you must pay the filing fees on the spot, as a tax. This is, after all, very well-organized crime we are talking about. Now, to bring this point home again, you are not the owner of your property, your home, or your vehicle. You are a tenant. You have permission to operate the state's vehicle and live in the state's home and on the state's land, and the state may take its property at any time. Ah, but that brings us back to our friend Joe and many more like him around the country and the world. Since Joe is a secured party creditor, Joe has taken ownership away from the state and placed it into his own trust through his UCC-1 filing, and then notified the government of this fact multiple times. And because Joe has rescinded his driver's license and removed the state's license plates from his lawful property, he is now a traveler, free to lawfully travel on all public roads without the burdens and tyranny of legal code. With no license and no other contracts, the court and the evil Cheney-esque judge simply have no authority over Joe. He is not contracted with them. He is not bound by their codes anymore. He is free from corporate legalities, and there is no jurisdiction over a free man without his consent. But they still pull Joe over and harass him, of course. This can really be attributed back to the slave issue we spoke of above. The code enforcement officers are the worst kind of slaves, because they steal the freedoms and bash the heads in of other slaves without questioning why, sometimes enjoying the false power. They are what was once called the House Negro, or the House Slave. Give even a conscious slave just a little bit of authority, and he will use that authority over the rest of the slaves just as harshly as his masters. This is the story of the largest and most violent street gang in America, the Collective Municipal Police Departments. As an example of what this gang is capable of, Joe told me a story that quite frankly really got my goat. Because he didn't like any of the local corporate churches masquerading as 501c3 nonprofits, branches of the for-profit incorporated main church, very much like bank branches, Joe decided to build his own church on the vacant lot beside his house, on his own property. After building and completing this church, he named it, appropriately enough, the unincorporated Church of Our Lord and Savior. Notice that the name of this church was not capitalized because this church was not incorporated. But Joe didn't request any permits, or for that matter, even notify the municipality or city of his plans to build this unincorporated church on his own property. Since his home was now in his own secured party creditorship, these codes that required a permit were lawfully and legally not applicable. But when the city found out about this non-taxable, non-corporately controlled house of worship, they sent out the code enforcement team, which, without Joe's consent, entered his private property and bulldozed his church down into a pile of unrecognizable refuse. They didn't even remove the wreckage, just leaving it there as a reminder of Joe's enslavement. Joe was pretty sure that one or more of his neighbors had actually tattled on him, probably worried about their property values going down, which is the most ironic part of this story. The slaves that live in government-owned homes, who falsely believe in such things as property values more than personal liberty and freedom, and that their homes are even their own property, were the ones who self-policed themselves and instigated the tearing down of a house of worship. This is a real eye-opener. I mean, how well do you know and trust your neighbors? If they watch shows like Law and Order, which has nothing to do with law or order, you may be their future victim. I'd say that God's law was broken in a big way on this day. Some dare call it anarchy. Now, some might say that this freedom thing is akin to anarchy. But again, this is an illogical fallacy, brought on by way too much TV. The unreasonable and illogical thought that freedom can only equate to anarchy is proof of the government's propaganda machine in action. When you, as an American, who are used to the customs and traffic rules and regulations of this country, then travel to Europe, do you insist on driving on the right side of the road, even though everyone else there drives on the left side of the road? No. You practice the customs of that society, being a responsible human. Do you murder, rape, and pillage while on safari in Africa, in a small, uncharted village, just because there is no law or authority that says you can't? The government and its police and armies might do this, but again, no, you don't. You enjoy the cultural beauty and freedom of an untarnished people, free from the legal constraints of corporate code. And if you lived amongst these people, you would adapt to their ways in order to live together peaceably and for the benefit of the community. We slaves are so afraid of freedom that we think it is the end of the world. We think that without legal code, we cannot have law. But in truth, there is only one basic law. That law is commonly referred to as God's law. God's law simply states that you should do no harm to other people or to the property they own. It's that simple. That covers just about everything. Rape, pillage, theft, murder, violence, persecution, slavery. Everything else is code. And everything else is what is unfortunately not so commonly referred to as a victimless crime. A victimless crime simply means that the particular code that is violated had nothing to do with God's law. So, no individual person was injured or killed, and or no individual's property was harmed or stolen. That covers most of the legalities, statutes, codes, signs, and other rules and regulations that are set in place by our legislators, our slave masters. These include running a stop sign, smoking a joint, speeding, holding a sign up in a non-free speech zone, assembling without a permit, walking your dog without a leash, selling flowers out of your home without a business license, walking across the street, or jaywalking, panhandling, not paying unjust and unapportioned taxes, driving without a license, etc. ad infinity. Fines and fees for these crimes have become what the Constitution defines as unreasonable, and more than most slaves can afford. Our prison system is full of people who have committed victimless crimes, and as we have discussed above, this is by design. America houses one out of every 100 persons in this country in prison. And many more than that are on probation, jail at home. This is profitable beyond measure. There's a very good reason, after all, that Dick Cheney and Halliburton got into the profitable private prison business. Read why slavery is actually legal in America through the legal system here. The worst part about this type of victimless crime is that you cannot face your accuser. There is no plaintiff. No one was injured and no property was damaged, not even the state. The only person harmed is the corporation called government. Making an illegal U-turn is not part of God's law. There is no victim. Note, when referring to God, we are referring to the abstract concept that we as human beings with a soul answer to a higher authority than government. This is the basis for the freedom of religion. Your belief in God, whichever one of the thousands of gods out there, is not necessarily for religious freedom. Freedom of religion does not mean freedom of Christianity. Remember, all minorities, even religious ones, must have representation, protection, under a republic form of government. This is one of the most important constitutional God-given rights there is. And unfortunately, it is one of the most corporately abused as a collective religious, non-profit crime syndicate. Law is always a part of any society, be it custom or common acquiescence. But only law, not the for-profit, tyrannical codification of every facet of life. And Joe would certainly agree. Accepted for value, or A for V. One last thing. Because we have been used as collateral for the credit and printing of Federal Reserve notes in America without a real choice, you have the right of seeking a remedy for that use of your straw man's trust fund. Accepted for value, or A4V, is a term that describes the offsetting of a straw man's debt. Your corporate personhood, your straw man, is where all of your contracts and debts are assigned. They are attached to your social security number, your slave number. They are not attached to you as a living, breathing human being with a soul. It is very important to distinguish between the two. Our friend Joe has been successfully using A4V to pay for such things as property taxes, loan payments, and other debts for many, many years. Others have used it for student loans, home payments, credit card payments, and many other types of loans and monetary contracts. Here is a simple explanation of how it works. Step 1, you receive a bill from a corporation. This is not to be used for purchases. All businesses are incorporated in some form and are conducting contractual commerce with your straw man. Otherwise, you would not be receiving a bill. Step 2, you turn that bill or debit into a check or credit by stamping accepted for value in red and signing in blue. Seek experienced instruction, as this has to be done exactly right. If you look at a bill that you have received from a corporation and then set it side by side with a paycheck that you receive from the corporation that you work at, you will see that they are set up in very much the same way. The top 2/3 of the bill is an explanation of what is being charged, and the bottom 1/3 is a debit in the form of a payment stub. But the paycheck is exactly the same, except that the top part is an itemization of gross payment, taxes, and net income, and the bottom portion is a credit in the form of a check payable to you from the corporation. By following exacting instruction, you are simply changing that bill, the debit payment stub, into a check, a credit from your strawman trust account. Accepted for value is stamped across the bill, your Social Security number without dashes, your Social Security number with dashes, your straw man name, your human name, and finally your signature in blue ink. Not necessarily in that order. Step 3, you send that bill, now an accepted for value check, into the IRS. The IRS is backed up with A4V claims, as many folks are now comprehending what I am telling you here. Step 4. After this A4V is finally processed, the debit is taken from your strawman trust account as human collateral or chattel and sent as a credit, a check from the IRS, to the corporation that sent you the bill in the first place. Step 5, that corporation cashes the check, or credit, to pay off your straw man's original debt. Your debt to that creditor has now been offset. Now understand that the IRS is actually happy to do this, because it just created credit money into the economy instead of debt money. It accessed the money in your trust without having to rely on a bank to create a note. And as I understand it, it cannot access this trust account any other way. This works for anything, as far as I can tell, but it cannot be used to purchase items. This is to offset already assigned and existing debt. So going out and purchasing a $100,000 car and then trying to pay off the car in a month or two could be considered a misuse of this remedy. This is not for stupid or greedy people. Sorry. This is for people who wish to save their homes from greedy banks. This is for people that are honestly seeking a remedy for the ridiculous costs of higher education. This is for people who fell for the bank and credit industry's usurious predatory methods to trap them in high-interest credit cards and collateralized loans with no other way out. This is not so that you can buy a new BMW and pay it off in a month. Those idiots who can't comprehend justice and remedy, let alone responsibility, are doomed to become a victim of their own greed and will joyfully be able to visit the rest of the victimless criminals in prison. Now, if this doesn't make sense to you, then think of it this way. What do you think happens when you declare bankruptcy? Only incorporated entities can declare bankruptcy. What do you think is happening when you make this declaration? You are declaring that your strawman corporation is so far in debt that you, as the caretaker of that corporation, cannot any longer pay that debt. So you are offsetting all of that debt attached to your corporation and starting over with a clean slate. Do you think these companies are losing money because you declare bankruptcy? Of course not. They don't care one way or the other. Whether they write off the debt or collect the debt, they will still make their money. And by the time they add fees, late fees, transfer fees, 3-month collection fees, interest fees, and any other type of fee that they can imagine, they end up making more off of a charged-off account than they do in a successful collection. This is the unethical UCC form of business that has engulfed our world. It is not pretty, and it is not nice. In fact, it is pure evil. But as long as it is in place, you may as well know what your defenses and remedies are for being forced to live in it. For a more detailed look at accepted for value and straw man issues, go to the following sites. In conclusion, after many encounters with different folks who are walking the walk in the Secure Party creditor free man sovereignty movement, I'm sorry to say that this is not a figment of my imagination. I hope that somehow a support group can be started so that all of these people from across the country, who are each using only parts of the whole puzzle, can come together and create a definitive collection of legal remedies for this seemingly endless maze of a legal mess. And I hope that whoever does this isn't just trying to make a buck. There is nothing worse in my eyes than a patriot for profit. I hope that this writing helps all who wish to understand the veil of fiction that has been pinned to us all since birth. May your journey be filled with brighter days. Once again, please do not attempt any of this on just my writing here. This is something that should be studied and perfected before taking the plunge. This is only an attempt to put into basic comprehension what is otherwise a bailiwick of legalese and international enslavement. And if I have any of this wrong, please don't hesitate to comment below, so that all can learn from the more astute among us. Mine is only to conceptualize the system, not to spear at the heart. Thank you for listening. This is Clint Richardson, reality blogger with 1g.wordpress.com, Monday, March 14th, 2011.